It's Tuesday, January 4th, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On this edition of Ozarks, we take a closer look at a small family-owned company called Invotech. And a local police department is preparing to plunge into a chilly lake for a good cause. Also, tonight, the Arkansas Razorbacks will take on the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. The matchup will be broadcast by ESPN beginning at 7:30. In honor of the game, I will be sharing some facts about the teams and the Sugar Bowl itself throughout the show. But first, we shift our attention from a hard-hitting sport to helpful hardware. For more than 20 years, a small family-owned company called Invotech has been researching and developing novel computer input devices for severely disabled people. But as Jacqueline Froelich reports, it's also creating a way to provide state-of-the-art hardware to those who are financially devastated by their circumstance.
Most of us are totally hooked on email, texting, the web, the cloud, not to mention social networks. So imagine how frustrating it would be if you were physically blocked from using your computer every day. That's what the founders of Invotech, developer and manufacturer of adaptive computer input devices, strive to overcome. Company headquarters are situated in a small two-story building in an unincorporated residential district outside of Alma in Crawford County. Tom Jacobs, Invotech's founder and president, is a tall man with thick salt and pepper hair and tons of energy.
Our focus is how do we get you into a computer and give you efficient access to that computer.
Jacobs, a licensed professional engineer who specializes in assistive technology, was inspired to create adaptive devices 22 years ago. After he volunteered as an aide to children stricken with cerebral palsy. Invotech's a vertical company, meaning everything is done in-house. Jacobs and his wife Diane, also an engineer, have six full-time staff. Today on task are Barrett Ewing, project engineer, Jeffrey Edwards, software engineer, son Eric Jacobs, a designer when he's not away at college, and Quirky Moss, who serves as client advocate. Sean Adair, a Fort Smith artist, serves as creative director. Jerry Russell, a genius fabricator's product manager, who manufactures Invotech devices in the firm's lower level. Via the Federal Small Business Research Innovation Program, Invotech has secured 21 National Institutes of Health research grants.
And Invotech, out here in the backwoods of Alma, Arkansas, has received over $4 million in research and development funds for new technologies to help people with very severe disabilities.
Search disability and computers on your website and you'll find plenty of aggregator sites for devices like EnableMart, which lists 3,000 assistive technology devices from over 200 manufacturers. But Tom Jacobs warns, buyer beware.
It's pretty easy to go through and design a device and use it for a minute and say, oh, okay, this is going to work, you know, and then send it out as a product. We have a lot of discussions in our office about how important it is to use our own products enough so that we really have a sense of how fatiguing they are or how difficult they are to use or whether they're really optimally designed or not. But once we design them here and we're fairly comfortable with them, then we have clinical groups around the country, here again, mostly in Nebraska. The Madonna Rehab Hospital is a really good collaborator for us. And so in that environment, we get to see people with really severe disabilities that are in a hospital, in a rehabilitation environment, use our technologies. And then once that technology is proven, we have people in the community that we volunteer time with and who volunteer time with us.
Martin Willems tests devices for Invotech. He's a retired engineer for Whirlpool Corporation in Fort Smith. He was riding his motorcycle out in the woods 5 years ago, hit something, and crashed. He doesn't remember what happened. He woke up paralyzed.
Hi, Martin.
You must be Jack.
I am. How are you?
Just follow me. We'll go back.
I will. I'll follow you.
We'll go back.
Willems is able to move his head some, so he's able to drive his wheelchair using a joystick. He pushes with his chin. We visit for a bit, then he guides us to his computer monitor to demonstrate his new toy, an Invotech AccuPoint head tracker. On his forehead is a sensor affixed with three silver beads. As Willems moves the beads, it activates an on-screen cursor. He slowly types letters using a system called DwellClick. on an on-screen keyboard.
Here.
Yes.
And then these four icons are the mouse functions.
Okay.
You've got left click, right click.
Martin Willems can now correspond with his daughter Jenny, research medical sites, and communicate via email with his doctors.
And I have a couple of websites to keep up with the latest cure attempts for spinal cord injuries.
Martin Willems, like others with severe spinal cord injuries, are circumscribed to strict medical regimes they must follow each day. So going online whenever he wants provides a refreshing escape.
I had to depend on my wife or my nurse's aide to manipulate the computer and go to different places. And then I would, dictate a letter or whatever, which was awkward. So it just opened up a whole new world for me.
Invotech's innovative acupoint tracker works even if a client has tremors, says Tom Jacobs. And his latest invention is a new type of voice recognition software.
A special speech recognition system that takes advantage of the information that's in that, what we call dysarthric speech, speech that's not easy to understand, and use that information in order to minimize the amount of typing that somebody has to do. So they type the first letter of a word, and then they say the word. And even though you wouldn't be able to understand the word that they said, there's enough information in there to really reduce the amount of typing that they need to do.
Project engineer Barrett Ewing demonstrates Invotech's new and very unique safe laser pointing system. He puts on a headset and directs the red point of light to a computer monitor alphanumeric board.
And if you dwell on a key long enough, it will select that key and put it into the LCD screen.
So with dwell clicking, the client, even if he can't speak, can, letter by letter, communicate. The device is ultra-sensitive, so even the slightest move makes it work. Invotech's also working on a device for disabled toddlers, but despite all this cutting-edge R&D, the company's chronically hitting a wall.
It's a struggle because the people that we work with, because of their medical condition, they're relatively medically fragile, okay? The things that they want to be able to do usually don't allow them to make a lot of money, and so because of their situation, they really can't afford the technology. And the technologies that we design are usually not considered medically necessary.
Insurance won't pay for computer hardware stuff like this, and Medicare might if the computer devices assist communications between client and caregiver. The products are expensive, as much as $5,000. So that's why Invotech offers a very affordable monthly flat fee package, devices along with technical support and upgrades. But the company has also launched this summer a program called Be Extraordinary, which accepts donations through a tax-deductible umbrella to distribute devices and support at no cost to selected clients.
And the idea behind it is that for people that have a very clear life goal, something that they really want to achieve, that we make a special effort to go through and help them achieve that goal.
Invotech's collaborating with the Arkansas Spinal Cord Commission in choosing the right candidates. Among the pilot group is Charlie Thompson. The 40-year-old resident of Pine Bluff broke his neck after his car, which blew a rear tire, overturned. He spoke from his home via a speaker cell phone, which is a bit murky, so you'll have to listen closely.
And now, at this point in my life, I really thank God for that accident. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Home health nursing and family provide daily care for Charlie, although he is able to feed himself, brush his teeth, and wash his face. But now, thanks to Invotech, he's going back to school.
I'm going to Bible school.
Before his accident, Charlie Thompson worked as a personal fitness trainer. Now his goal is to help people become spiritually fit. Beyond that, he intends to minister to others with spinal cord injuries, he said.
In a hospital, or whether it be at a prison, and of course, my local church, and help Invotech as much as I can because they have really helped me.
Invotech, turns out, is a business hybrid, part for-profit and part nonprofit. Charlie's one of the first clients in the world to use Invotech's safe laser communication system. Invotech's president, Tom Jacobs, says his devices even help individuals with locked-in syndrome, those who cannot speak or move.
And they put one of our laser keyboard prototypes in front of him, and they tried to get him to move his head, and nothing happened. And so they started to take it away, and he became agitated. And then through a process known as eye linking, where they kind of watch the letters on a little board and move the little board up and down, and when your eyes meet between a letter, you know that's the letter that the person was trying to spell or trying to get to you. And so he spelled out that he wanted to keep that laser keyboard. And pretty soon he was able to figure out how to move it more and more. And that was really a pivotal moment in our research with him, because he learned very quickly, within the matter of a couple of weeks, to be able to move his head.
That locked-in client became unlocked with the help of Invotech. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information or to make a contribution to Be Extraordinary, visit invotech.org. Let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. This is the Special Olympics Oath, and bravery is certainly one attribute needed by polar bear plunge participants who will jump into the chilly water of Table Rock Lake on January 29th. The Eureka Springs Police Department is hosting the annual fundraiser, and all proceeds will benefit Special Olympics Arkansas, an organization Chief of Police Earl Hyatt is pleased to support.
This is our third polar bear jump or polar bear plunge for Special Olympics, but we've been raising money for Special Olympics for many years. I couldn't even tell you how many. Special Olympics is just our favorite charity. Bar none.
The Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. Foundation created Special Olympics in 1968. During the last four decades, it has become the world's largest program of sports training and athletic competition for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. In 1970, Arkansas hosted its first summer games with 283 athletes competing in various track and field events, and has grown to a competition program for athletes wanting to train and compete in aquatics, softball, volleyball, unified football, powerlifting, and cycling. Other Special Olympics Arkansas sports include basketball, bowling, figure skating, floor hockey, and gymnastics. This nonprofit provides approximately 14,000 individuals the opportunity to excel. These athletes are inspiring to Hyatt, who says he attends as many of the group's events as he can.
When you see these special needs children out there giving it every single thing that they have, and when their efforts result in them winning, and their faces, the look on their face that they've accomplished something, it takes your breath away.
During the past few years, Hyatt says various people, including children, seniors, adults, and some Special Olympics athletes, have participated in this event. Hyatt himself has even taken a plunge into the cool lake water to support the nonprofit.
You know, I was pretty apprehensive the first time I did it, and then after doing it, I thought it was fun. It really was fun. You think that water is just going to be the worst thing you could ever do, but it's not. You know, jumping in that cold water is okay. You get out, you're just cold. And you go dry off, change clothes, and you're fine.
All ages are welcome, but Hyatt says juveniles must have a parent sign a waiver. Plungers must donate at least $50 to participate. Hyatt says those who prefer to stay dry are also welcome to make a donation. Registration will begin at 10 a.m. and the plunge is scheduled for 11. Hyatt says the event will take place at the point near the marina on Holiday Island. Participants may register prior to the event by contacting the Eureka Springs Police Department at 479-253-8666. Other polar bear plunges are scheduled at various locations around the state through the month of February. Fort Smith will host a plunge February 5th, and Rogers will host one February 12th. More information is available at 501-771-0222 or SpecialOlympicsArkansas.org.
they reach their fingers in that old sugar bowl, lick 'em and sweeten their soul. Little girls and little boys never get old. They know they're being naughty, but they love that sugar bowl.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and that was Captain Beefheart with the song Sugar Bowl. Tonight, the Arkansas Razorbacks will take on the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Sugar Bowl, which is an annual American college football bowl game played in the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The Sugar Bowl has been played annually since January 1, 1935, and it celebrated its 75th anniversary on January 2, 2009. The Sugar Bowl, along with the Orange Bowl and Sun Bowl, are the second oldest bowl games in the country behind the Rose Bowl, which was first played in 1902 and has been played annually since 1916. The last time came in 2002 when LSU topped Illinois 47-34. The SEC and Big Ten also met in the New Orleans-based game in 1984 when Auburn beat Michigan 9-7, and in 1978 when Alabama beat Ohio State 35-6. SEC teams have compiled a 33-34-1 record in the Sugar Bowl, and Big Ten teams are 2-7. This is Ozarks at Large.
After hearing the Symphony No. 4 by Johannes Brahms, one critic said, "It's like a dark well. The longer we look into it, the more brightly the reflected stars shine back." Brahms' 4th in concert from San Francisco on Tuesdays performs today from American Public Media.
That's on performance today, tonight at 8 o'clock, here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Through the back window of our 59 wagon, I watched my best friend Jamie slipping further away.
Country singer Patti Loveless was born Patricia Ramey on this date in 1957 in Pikeville, Kentucky. As a young girl, she listened to the Opry on a radio propped in the kitchen window and first saw live music when her father, a coal miner, took her to see Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs at the Pollyanna Drive-In. At 16, she had a writing-singing stint with the Grand Ole Opry's Wilburn Brothers. Loveless married Terry Loveless, the Wilburn's drummer, in 1976, and both played in various rock bands in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. After a bout with alcoholism, Loveless moved to Nashville in 1985 to pursue a career in country music again. Although her marriage broke up that year, she kept her married name, changing the spelling slightly. Her brother Roger helped her secure a singles deal with MCA Records, and she cut her first album in 1987. Her first top 10 hit was If My Heart Had Windows, originally a hit for George Jones in 1967. Other hits followed, including A Little Bit in Love, Timber, I'm Falling in Love, and Chains. The Opry inducted her in 1988. She left MCA and arrived at Epic Records in 1992. She immediately hit number one with Blame It on Your Heart in 1993 from the album Only What I Feel. The heartbreaking How Can I Help You Say Goodbye entered the top 10 in 1994. With the feisty I Try to Think About Elvis and the delicate Here I Am and You Don't Even Know Who I Am, When Fallen Angels Fly was awarded the 1995 CMA Album of the Year, only the second time a woman has won. With that momentum, Loveless scored two number one hits, You Can Feel Bad and Lonely Too Long, from 1996's The Trouble with the Truth. That year, she was voted the CMA Female Vocalist of the Year and the Academy of Country Music's Top Female Vocalist in 1996. During the last decade, Loveless has continued recording and releasing new albums. On this date in 1969, the first commercial barges from Wheeling, West Virginia and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, docked at the port of Little Rock thanks to progress on construction of the McClellan-Kerr Arkansas River Navigation System, The project, which was initiated to control flooding and improve navigation along the river, handles hundreds of thousands of shipments annually, provides cost savings to hundreds of companies, and has added billions of dollars each year in trade transportation in Arkansas and Oklahoma. Former professional wrestler Jesse Ventura was sworn in as governor of Minnesota on this date in 1999. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Tuesday, January 4th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin, the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And we're going to talk about one of my daughter's favorite people right now.
All right.
Barney. Barney the big purple dinosaur.
Okay. One of her favorite dinosaurs, then.
Well, I don't know that she knows he's a dinosaur. Okay. He's just a big purple guy.
Is he going to be around here?
He is going to be at the Fort Smith Convention Center at 3 and 6:30 today.
Oh.
Two shows. Tickets start at $15. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.
Okay.
There's a Spanish story time for families at 6:30 tonight at Rogers Public Library. So if you need to get the kids out of the house, once again, let them go make a mess at somebody else's house. If you happen to be in New Orleans and checking us out on the web,
because today is the day of the Sugar Bowl,
there's a game day jazz lunch sponsored by the Arkansas Alumni Association at 2 o'clock at the Hilton New Orleans Riverside on Poitras. Sugar Bowl fan jam at 4 o'clock at the Louisiana Superdome Champion Square. So even if you don't have tickets for the game, you can go party. And the game starts at 7:30, Hogs versus Ohio State, and it will be televised on ESPN.
Going to watch?
Probably.
Okay. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Sugar.
Sugar Sugar was the 1969 number one hit single by the fictional characters the Archies. Tonight's appearance at the Sugar Bowl will be the first time the Arkansas Razorbacks have played in a BCS game. Arkansas is making its sixth appearance in the Sugar Bowl, which is the seventh most appearances in the Bowl's history. Arkansas is 1-4 in the Sugar Bowl, and Arkansas last played in the Sugar Bowl on January 1, 1980, in a 24-9 loss to Alabama. That loss was to a fellow SEC team. When playing against Big Ten opponents, Arkansas is 1-5, with its lone win coming against Northwestern in 1981. One interesting fact about the U of A is its athletic teams have not always been called the Razorbacks. During the early years of its athletic history, the Cardinals served as the university nickname. A lot of things changed in 1909 when Arkansas football coach Hugo Bezdek called his players, quote, a wild band of Razorback Hogs, after guiding his team to a 16-0 victory over Louisiana State on October 30th. Alluding to the Razorback, characterized by a ridgeback and tenacious wild fighting ability, Bezdek never forgot this idea and often called his team a fighting band of Razorbacks. This new nickname became increasingly popular, and the student body voted to change the official university mascot from the Cardinal to the Razorbacks in 1910. In the 1920s, Wu Pig Sui was added as the school yell, referred to more commonly as the Hog Call. There are dozens of lions, tigers, and bears, but in all of college athletics, there is only one Razorback. The distinctive logo of the Arkansas teams is officially known as the Profile Hog, but is known to many fans as the Helmet Hog, a fixture of the football team's helmet for almost half a century. Another type of Arkansas wildlife having an interesting week is the blackbird. Testing by the Arkansas Livestock and Poultry Commission has determined that thousands of blackbirds that fell over BB New Year's Eve appear to have died from blunt trauma in midair. FM89's Ron Breeding has this report.
Keith Stevens of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission says between 4 and 5,000 red-winged blackbirds appear to have been startled by something, most likely New Year's Eve fireworks. Stevens says the bird deaths appear unrelated to a massive fish kill one day earlier along a stretch of the Arkansas River between Ozark and Clarksville. As many as 100,000 drumfish, he says, were more likely killed by disease. Still, the deaths of the two species one day and 100 miles apart has raised questions. A story linked by the conservative website DrudgeReport.com wonders whether secret government testing of chemical or biological agents may be to blame. Stevens says the Game and Fish Commission understands the concern.
You know, I understand. This is very, very odd to have two things like this happen at the same time. You know, and it's just, so far, it just looks like coincidence. There just doesn't look like there's any connection.
For FM 89 News, I'm Ron Breeding.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. 2011 is not yet 100 years old, so taking inventory of all that happened in 2010 is still an exercise worth taking. Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net is using this first week of a new year to examine the previous year's events in business and politics. On tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, he'll list what he ranked as the top 10 most important political stories of 2010, a year packed with political firsts in Arkansas. On today's edition of Ozarks, Roby puts his focus on the top business developments of the year, from a major company sale in Fort Smith to rising unemployment. But he says the biggest business story of the previous year was health reform legislation and the events in Arkansas that surrounded that process.
No other topic infiltrated the business and political psyche like health care reform did in 2010. After a Christmas 2009 vote to move a version of the controversial health care overhaul forward, the stage was set for this year, and the reform measure stirred political passion and business uncertainty. The bill led to the defeat of a two-term incumbent U.S. Senator from Arkansas, Blanche Lincoln, while creating landmark victories at the federal, state, and local levels for Republicans. Buoyed by Tea Party conservatives, health care reform and its perceived detrimental effects became the rallying cry for a movement of voters. For businesses, many were quick to take one-time charges and cut benefits as they prepared for the changes. Others stewed in indecision, awaiting controversial regulations that will be formed in 2011. From coffee shops to corporate boardrooms, the rollicking healthcare reform debate was the defining issue of conversation for the entire year. Our number two business story, a Swedish suitor chases Baldor Electric. Zurich, Switzerland-based ABB, a global power and automation systems company that employs 117,000 worldwide, announced on November 29th a $4.2 billion deal to acquire Fort Smith-based Baldor in a transaction expected to close in the first quarter of 2011. The Baldor board unanimously agreed to the deal, although it was later disclosed that ABB had made previous attempts to buy Baldor. ABB said it will keep the corporate operation in Fort Smith, a move that the local and state business community hopes to see honored. Our number three business story, the housing recovery stalls. Home sales across Arkansas started 2010 with a bang as federal tax incentives for home buyers and refinancing were extended from late 2009. The incentives had been put in place to stimulate the economy from its doldrums, and they seemed to spark purchases. In short, anybody who was going to buy actually did. Through May 2010, year-to-date home sales in Arkansas were up 13%. But as the year wore on and the incentives phased out, that trend reversed. By the end of November 2010, year-to-date home sales in Arkansas were more than 6% lower than the same period in 2009. Our number four business story, it's still the economy. Surprise, 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 a recent revised gross domestic product report showed an even gloomier picture of the U.S. economy in 2009, with construction and manufacturing showing the biggest declines. However, some were impressed with Arkansas's toughness after reviewing the national trends. The Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis reported in December 2010 that 16 of 22 major industry groups contributed to the decline in real GDP growth in 2009. The construction sector, which was down for the fifth consecutive year, saw its economic activity decline more than 15%. Dr. Michael Paco, chief economist and state economic forecaster at the Institute for Economic Advancement at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock said the report indicated the resilience of the Arkansas economy. Our number five business story, Arkansas banks find deals, but they warn that disaster may be looming. With the closure of troubled First Southern Bank in Batesville near the end of 2010, there have only been two Arkansas banks to land on the FDIC's failed banks list in the last decade. At the same time, Arkansas banks emerged as major players in acquiring insolvent banks across the U.S. from the federal government. As of December 17th, of the 157 Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation insured institutions to crash in the past year, Arkansas banks snapped up more than a dozen failing lenders in six states with assets of more than $3.5 billion. Bank of the Ozarks announced a week before Christmas it had entered into a deal to purchase assets and assume deposits of Chestatee State Bank of Dawsonville, Georgia. It was the fourth bank that Little Rock-based Bank of the Ozarks took over this year. Conway-based Home Bank Shares, the parent company of Centennial Bank, purchased six troubled banks from the FDIC's failed bank inventory. Home Bank Shares and Bank of the Ozark executives have indicated they will continue to seek new acquisition opportunities, especially in Florida, Georgia, and the Southeast. Other banks from Arkansas to cash in on the deals included Pine Bluff-based Simmons First and Bentonville-based Arvest Bank. Still, Arkansas bankers expressed trepidation with the recently enacted financial reform overhaul law known as the Dodd-Frank Act. Rennie Rutledge, chairman of the First Security Bank Corp and former chairman of the Arkansas Bankers Association, said he lobbied Arkansas lawmakers to kill the federal bill. He said increased insurance limits for depositors, the recalculation of FDIC premiums for community banks, and the Fed's additional powers and ability to monitor systemic risk to the overall economy were all good outcomes of the new law. However, Rutledge argued that too much new regulation for smaller banks and the soon-to-be powerful Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will hurt Arkansas institutions. Our number six story, the state jobless picture mirrors the nation to some extent as unemployment insurance debt grows. The employment picture for the state of Arkansas is a microcosm of the nation's jobless recovery. Essentially, Arkansas's labor market is mostly unchanged from a year ago, just like the national average, except for the fact that the state's civilian labor force is shrinking in size. Meanwhile, the Arkansas legislature will face the looming question in the upcoming session of how the state will get a handle on a nearly $400 million debt to the federal government related to unemployment benefit payments. Arkansas has been borrowing from the Fed since 2009, and the deficit of the state unemployment trust fund is expected to reach $450 million in 2011. Other states are in similar straits, and some are in even deeper holes. Officials in other states are hoping that the federal government will forgive the debt, but Arkansas business and government leaders don't expect that to happen. Our number seven story, Dillard's and Tyson Foods mount comebacks. Christmas in 2009 or the year before wasn't a very merry affair for Dillard's, but 2010's been a year to remember for the Little Rock upscale retailer. It seems like only days ago when the Little Rock retail chain stock fell to under $4 a share. That precipitous drop in the spring of 2009 caused two New York hedge funds to seek changes to the company's board of directors. In a proxy fight to add four new directors to the Dillard's board, New York-based Barrington Group said changes were needed to improve the company's operations, profitability, corporate governance, and share price performance. My, how things have changed. Today, Dillard's is one of the darlings of the retail sector and recently landed on the Fortune 500 list of the top-performing stocks of 2010 at number 10 with a year-to-date yield of 97%. Dillard's stock has traded above $38 per share in recent days. Now, Tyson Foods' turnaround in 2010 was a magnified mirror image of Dillard's. The Springdale-based meat giant's full-year earnings topped $780 million compared to a $547 million net loss in the previous year. For Tyson, it was a back-to-basics approach that helped restore company confidence and reduce its debt to its lowest level in a decade. Our number eight story centers on Walmart and how its executives began to play musical chairs in 2010. Years from now, Wall Street analysts may look back at this past year as a year of dynamic change at Walmart, beginning in the executive suite. Walmart President and CEO Mike Duke, who took over 2 years ago after the surprise announcement that company chief Lee Scott would step down, began putting his stamp on the company in 2010. In July, the company announced that Duke's former rival for the company's top spot was taking a new role as president and CEO of Global.com and Global Sourcing. Eduardo Castro Wright, Walmart's vice chairman and head of the company's flagship U.S. operations, was replaced by Bill Simon as president and CEO of Walmart U.S. Now, shortly after Simon was installed as the head of the U.S. division, he began restructuring the senior leadership team at Walmart with the announcement that longtime chief merchandising officer John Fleming would resign from the company. A few months later, Walmart announced that its board of directors selected Charles Holley to succeed veteran chief financial officer Tom Shuey. Shortly after taking on the chief financial officer's job, Holley made a big splash on Wall Street by announcing the global retail giant's plans to boost its tepid U.S. sales and build upon international sales growth. In short, key aspects involved the company reducing capital expenditures for fiscal year 2011 and refocusing on smaller markets with smaller stores, a move perceived by many retail analysts as an effort to compete with dollar stores. Our number nine story, tax cuts emerging at the state and federal level. A lame duck Congress passed a renewal of the Bush-era tax cuts for 2 years as Democratic President Barack Obama and GOP congressional leaders struck a deal to extend the popular cuts. The $858 billion compromise keeps in place the Bush tax cuts, including tax rates for the wealthy that Obama had vowed to let expire. The deal also included a 13-month extension of jobless benefits for the unemployed and a nearly one-third cut in payroll taxes that finance Social Security. At the state level, Governor Mike Beebe proposed taking another half cent off the Arkansas grocery tax in his conservative pre-session balanced budget, but Republicans and some Democrats want more. More than a dozen pre-filed bills called for additional state tax cuts. Proposals include cutting the capital gains tax, new and used car taxes, income taxes, and more. Now, Beebe says that the half-cent grocery tax cut is all the state can afford, setting up a potential showdown with lawmakers when the 2011 General Assembly convenes in January. And finally, our number 10 business story for 2010, Fayetteville Shale Drilling matures. Fueled by billions of dollars of new investment in the Fayetteville Shale, Arkansas is now the seventh largest producer of marketed natural gas in the U.S., trailing only Texas, Wyoming, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Colorado, and Louisiana.
Roby Brock is the editor and publisher of TalkBusiness.net and the magazine Talk Business Quarterly. He will complete his review of the events of 2010 tomorrow on Ozarks at Large when he reviews the top 10 political stories of the year. Support for Roby Brock's coverage of Arkansas business and politics is provided by Hendrix College, a residential undergraduate liberal arts college. Learn more at hendrix.edu/odyssey. And the Little Rock National Airport at fly-lit.com, where travelers can book air, car, and hotel reservations online, track flights, and check the weather. Mobile phone access is also available at fly-lit.com/mobile. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com. This is Ozarks at Large, and that was Sugar Babe by the Steve Miller Band. Throughout the show, I've been sharing some facts about the Sugar Bowl, and now it's time to turn our attention to Ohio State. The university will be playing in a BCS Bowl for the sixth straight season. Ohio State is 1-2 in this bowl, and Ohio State's last Sugar Bowl came in a 24-14 win over Texas A&M on January 1st of 1999. Ohio State is 7-11-2 against SEC teams, including 0-9 in bowl games. The use of the term Buckeyes to refer to Ohio State University sports teams derives from the wider use of the term to refer to all residents of the state of Ohio. The university's athletic council officially adopted the term in 1950, but it had been in common use for many years before. As with many such terms that seem to have evolved rather than been decreed, the history of Buckeye is a little bit fuzzy. The Buckeye is a tree native to Ohio and particularly prevalent in the Ohio River Valley, whose shiny dark brown nuts with lighter tan patches resemble the eye of a deer. The nuts, although inedible, are attractive, and folk wisdom had it that carrying one in a pocket brings good luck and wards off rheumatism. However, in general, the trees and their nuts are of little practical use, but the tree has grit. It grows where others cannot, is difficult to kill, and adapts to its circumstances. Buckeye leaf decals are awarded to Ohio State football players for outstanding efforts on the field. This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. A new edition of Ozarks at Large is on tomorrow at noon here on KUAF. Before we leave, just want to say a quick happy birthday to my little brother, David, and also good luck to the Razorbacks tonight. Go Hogs! I'll leave you now with one more song about sugar. This is Sugar Sweet by Muddy Waters.
I want to tell about my baby. Speak of her with pride. She goes out the way just to make me satisfied. She's my baby. She's my baby. What a treat. Well, I can't call her sugar. Sugar never was so sweet. Well, I ain't no surprise. She served me nail, scratch down up from my head. She's my baby. She's my